Okay, this seems like the right time and the right place for a fresh start. Fresh start focusing on the old problem. And that is one of making sure that foundational blacks get what we're supposed to get. But you gotta do what you're supposed to do. A lot has been said about the tape, the recording of Ronald Reagan when he was governor of California back in 1971, saying what he really thought about Africans and just black people in general. In a conversation with then President Richard Nixon. Now, just to give a little bit of context, what had happened was the People's Republic of China, the communist government, the Chinese communists, they had been controlling the Chinese mainland ever since 1949. But thanks to the US, who didn't want to have to recognize any communist other than the Soviet Union in the UN, they had been blocking the People's Republic of China being admitted to the UN General Assembly. And instead, they took Taiwan, which was under the control of the ousted Chiang Kai-shek regime, who wasn't in control of nothing but a little island off the coast of China, and said, well, these guys, the Republic, so-called Republic of China, we're going to have them on the General Assembly, and they're going to be recognized as the Chinese government, basically the Chinese government in exile. That's what was happening. And the Taiwanese regime, they were basically saying that they had a right to the Chinese mainland. It was just a matter, just going to be a little matter of time for them to figure out how they were going to assert that right. But they were making claims to mainland China. Taiwan making claim to mainland China. This was absurd, but it just goes to show how much control white supremacy has and still has over the UN, that it went on for 20 years before the UN finally decided, you know what? We're living a lie. You got to come to terms with the Chi Coms. We can't pretend as if they're not in control of the Chinese mainland. And we're just making ourselves look stupid. So what happened was in 1971, the UN took a vote. Imagine that. The UN taking a vote on things and not just going along with what the white supremacists of the US say. And in the vote, what happened was they expelled Chiang Kai-shek's little Republic of China, the Taiwanese government making a claim that they were somehow the Republic of China. That was rejected, said, okay, Taiwan's not part of anything. And the Chi Coms were officially recognized as a member of the UN General Assembly. Now, when that vote was taken, the Tanzanian delegation, who was in attendance, started dancing. And that's what Ronald Reagan got so unhappy about. And because of the fact that memories are short, let me go ahead and play for you what old Ronald the Racist Reagan had to say about it.
Last night, I tell you, to watch that thing on television, as I did.
Yeah.
To see those monkeys from those African countries. Damn them, they're still uncomfortable wearing shoes.
Well, and then the tail wags the dog there, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Tail wags the dog.
Ironic that old racist Reagan would say something about black folks who apparently not even knowing how to wear shoes. As Dr. John Henry Clark pointed out, the Africans already had all that stuff going before the European lived in a house that had a window or even wore a shoe. That's just a historical reality. And another reality is there were lots of countries who voted to recognize China. It wasn't just the Africans who did. In fact, the man who unearthed this racist Reagan recording, he wrote an article for The Atlantic about it, and he pointed out that Richard Nixon's own State Department blamed other factions other than the Africans. If you want to blame somebody for the Taiwanese government being ousted from the UN and the Chi Coms being officially recognized and made part of the UN, you could blame the British, you could blame the French, and what they were doing behind the scenes, but no! Richard Nixon, far as he was concerned, those niggers were the ones to blame. Yeah, we know that there's everybody else who actually has real power and the blacks don't have any power at all, but we're blaming the black folks because they didn't obey. And that's what the real problem was. The real problem was that the black folks didn't do what they were told. Don't blame everybody else who actually was voting on this in large numbers. Just blame the handful of Africans because, well, black folks are always to blame whatever it is. Now, you heard just how racist Ronald Reagan was on that recording. But that's not the reason why I'm bringing it up. Ronald Reagan's racism is no surprise, no bombshell. It's certainly no breaking news. It's just confirmation of what everybody had already been saying all along. So why am I talking about it? Well, I want you to understand that Ronald Reagan not merely was a racist, but he also inadvertently, in spite of himself, this is 50 years ago, mind you, he made an interesting point about whether or not the United States ought to be part of the UN and how the best thing the US could do would be to withdraw from the voting process of the UN as a means of undermining the UN's legitimacy. I'm going to play for you now a clip of Ronald Reagan right after he made that racist little tirade to Richard Nixon. Here's a clip of Ronald Reagan being interviewed on the Dick Cavett Show in 1971, and this is how Reagan spoke about the entire affair when he was in front of polite company.
Are you upset about, what would you say the major things are that have happened in the last year that you would consider a bad development? Of course, I'm thinking of the, of the UN exclusion of Taiwan.
I was not only disappointed, I was a little indignant about that. Here's a nation that was one of the founding nations, the last of the big four is still alive, Chiang Kai-shek from World War II, and all these years they've abided by the bylaws and the constitution of the United Nations, and also while only 14 million people are on Taiwan, they have paid their dues or assessment to the UN on the basis of the 700 million Chinese on the mainland.
Yeah.
And I know the United States had recognized it didn't have the votes any longer to keep Red China out, but the by dropping their opposition, the understanding was that other nations would not oust Taiwan. And the plain truth of the matter is they just plain double-crossed the United States.
Did you feel that the president should have tried harder, or his team,
I don't know if anything they could have done. I happened to be on that Asian trip that the president had asked us to make for him at the time. Mm-hmm. And meeting ambassadors in six of the Asian countries and meeting the heads of state of all of those countries, everyone was confident that this would not happen, that it would wind up with both China's in there, because everyone was aware of the work that had been going on in the part of our country to see that that happened. First of all, the big surprise was when the vote was taken. No one expected the vote to be taken for another month. Yeah. And then there were several nations, as I say, that just deliberately broke their pledged word, went the other way. And I just, I thought that the United Nations, in that action, branded itself as a debating society, and I honestly don't believe that the United States should feel bound by any of its votes.
Did you go along with Senator Goldwater that we ought to pull out of it then?
Well, I think it'd be awfully hard. I understand he's saying it. I think it'd be awfully hard for a major nation. We all had so much hope in this organization and still believe, and I still believe, that someday the cause of world peace is only going to come about over a table with nations willing to talk instead of fight. So I think any nation would think a long time before they would deliver the death blow, and certainly if the United States withdrew, I think it would be the death blow of the United Nations. But I think there are other things we could do. I think that the United States, for example, I hinted at it a moment ago, I think the United States could participate in debate, in discussion, continue to support many of the agencies as we do that are doing good works, the kind of charitable agencies and educational functions and so forth, but just not participate in the voting. And by not voting ourselves, thus remove ourselves from being bound by any votes. You see, one thing that needs reorganization is the fact that here are more than half of the nations in the United Nations today can carry a vote as a majority, and they represent less than 10% of the world's population.
Mm-hmm. You'd be for reorganizing that. One thing.
Maybe some of these people who are so strong for one man, one vote ought to consider it with regard to the UN.
We must take a pause, excuse me.
Now, of course, Ronald Reagan, who was a mediocre actor but a world-class liar, you see that all of a sudden he rediscovered his civility and good manners. Well, because he was in front of white people, no doubt. And he said that he was disappointed and a little indignant. Well, you heard what he was saying behind the scenes. He wasn't a little anything other than a little racist. And you see how he put the blame on the Africans, making sure to end his little snide remarks with, "Some of those people who are so strong about one man, one vote ought to apply it to the UN." This coming from Ronald Reagan. Not only was he a liar, he didn't, basic math eluded him. Talking about people whose population is only a small fragment of the global population, the United States is only 5% of the world population, and yet it gets everything it wants in the UN. Well, you can see how Ronald Reagan, he's sitting here telling you, one man, one vote, he don't like that idea. Yeah, a lot of Ronald Reagan's political maneuverings, especially when he ran for president, are becoming a lot more clear, aren't they? He began his presidential campaign in Philadelphia, Mississippi. That's where Goodman, Schwerner, and Cheney were murdered in the 1960s. Yeah, Ronald Reagan knew how to get the point across to all. Forget about dog whistle. He believed in a foghorn. He didn't want to leave any doubt as to where he actually stood. It's asinine for him to be angry at the Africans. The Africans don't run the UN. They don't hold any power. They don't have the ability to sway anything. So why the hell was he singling out the black nations? For the same reason that white liberals singled out black voters in California after Proposition 8 passed. Black Californians were not the ones who put Proposition 8 over the top. Black Californians were already largely irrelevant as a voting bloc in California by that point. Proposition 8 passed by such a huge margin that even if every eligible black voter in California had voted against it, it wouldn't have meant anything. It still would have passed. So why were the white leftists and LGBT types so angry at black people? Why did they blame black people? Why were they all wagging their finger at black Californians? Why was all of their anger aimed at foundational blacks for something that we couldn't have stopped anyway? It's for the same reason that you didn't see any of these white leftists being angry at white women for voting for Trump. 2 out of 3 white women voted for Donald Trump, even though there was a recording, highly publicized, of him bragging about how he gropes and sexually abuses white women, and yet they went to vote for him anyway. But nobody was singling out white women. They were instead saying, you know, there were some black men who voted for Donald Trump, you know. Yeah, it was black men who put Donald Trump over the top. Wasn't those white women, it was the black men. Okay, I get it now. White supremacy is not based on anti-Asian racism. It's not based on anti-Muslim bigotry. It's not based on anti-female chauvinism. It's not based on anti-Latino racism. White supremacy is based upon and exists solely in the context of one thing: anti-black racism. That's it. Now, you may have a lot of black folks and some of these other non-black groups who are confused about that, but the white supremacists are not confused on that point at all. Doesn't matter if they're on the political right or the political left. Whenever they don't get what they want, if they think there's a chance to scapegoat black people, they're going to take it because they have black on the brain constantly. White supremacy does not measure its condition by how well these other non-white groups are doing. White supremacy measures its condition by how well, or rather poorly, black people are doing. You've never heard some white supremacist griping about how he saw a Korean at a stoplight driving a better car than him and it set him off? Mark Furman didn't say that if he saw a Latino driving a nice car, he would pull him over whether he had a reason to or not. He said, if I see a black man driving a nice car and he ain't wearing a suit, which means that he doesn't think this guy has any power. If you're wearing a suit, you might be connected. You probably got a good job, which means you got some friends. So if he ain't wearing a suit, I'm pulling him over. That's what Mark Furman said, looking for soft targets. But he said only if they're black, though. White supremacy, whether it be right-wing racist like Reagan or a left-wing undercover bigot like Rachel Maddow and that gaggle of clowns at MSNBC, they are hyper-focused on controlling us. That's where this really comes from. Do we have the niggers under control? Are they doing as we said? That's what Reagan was pointing out. Oh, we had gotten all of these assurances. Yeah, because, you know, you've been given a couple of shekels to these corrupt leaders that white power installed in these African nations. They're obedient little pets. And well, it seems their pets didn't roll over and play dead on cue, as the U.S. expected, and Reagan's blaming them, because as far as he was concerned, hey, all this money that we gave you few Negroes so you could buy a couple of little ghetto trinkets, and apparently you didn't toe the line, well, there's gonna be hell to pay. If the white supremacists don't have control of anything else in this world, and at the rate things are going, that's quickly becoming the case, they still expect to be able to control everything that black people do. As far as they're concerned, that's supposed to be one of the immutable laws of the universe. Doesn't matter if I don't have anything else in this world, I still control these niggers. That's their mentality. Even if black people do not owe them anything, even if they don't have any leverage as far as they're concerned, black people should still do what we say anyway. So when black people defy white expectations at the UN or in California, these white supremacists lose their minds. Because the foundation of white supremacy is black subjugation, if they see black people not being forced to obey, if they see any black person who ain't toeing the line and keeping their head down and doing exactly what white power expects them to do, they immediately get disappointed and a little indignant. See, Ronald Reagan wasn't just speaking for himself. He wasn't just speaking for the racists in the Republican Party. He was speaking for all of white supremacy. That's what he was doing. After all, black people are supposed to do one thing and one thing only. Black people only exist for one reason and one reason only, to obey. White supremacy is terminally insecure with itself. That's how it got started, from a terminal insecurity, a fundamental lack of assurance, because white supremacy is a lie. It's as fake as the Easter Bunny, but it uses real violence in order to give substance to that lie, to force the rest of the world to play along with that lie. And they're terrified of the day that black people in particular decide to overthrow white supremacy, because they're standing on our heads. And when we start moving, and that's part of the reason why you got to be part of a movement, but when we start moving and we start shaking things up, we make it where white supremacy starts to lose its footing, it loses its balance, and it's terrified that it will fall. And it knows it's going to fall at some point, and that we're the ones who are going to take it down. So as far as they're concerned, they got to be hyper vigilant to make sure that black people are kept under control. It's about more than Ronald Reagan. The left-wing white supremacists may bite their tongue and manage not to drop the racial slurs as often as the right-wing white supremacists, but this is a distinction without a difference. Look at how they react when black people think and act for ourselves, when we pursue our own interests, and then you'll see what they really think. And that moment you understand that there is no difference between the white right or the white left where black people's actions are concerned. The gall of this bastard to say that there were nations who deliberately broke their pledged word. Oh, you mean like the European has done with every agreement he's ever signed? The European has never signed a single agreement, not even with other Europeans that he's ever kept. So what you're saying is these African nations are acting like the European ones, acting like the United States. The United States has not signed one agreement that it's ever kept. Not on nuclear treaties, not on trade, not on human rights. There ain't a damn agreement that the U.S. has ever signed that it's actually kept its word on. So what he's mad about is that the Africans are acting like the Europeans. The Africans gave the white supremacists a dose of their own medicine. What Reagan was mad about was he didn't have a means to immediately punish those niggers. You can't bring out the cat of nine tails now, and he was mad. All he could do was fume on a late night TV show. Well, that is until he became president. Then all of a sudden, as far as he was concerned, now we're going to pay back those niggers through all sorts of retributive policies. Yeah, it's time for some payback now. We're going to do the payback through policy. I remember that after Reagan died, may he roast in hell, you had Sam Donaldson of ABC talking about, he had a bunch of panels on all the TV shows doing their reminiscences of old Reagan, oh, that old codger. And one of the people who was talking was Sam Donaldson from ABC News, and he was relating a story about how Desmond Tutu, the very confused bishop from South Africa, how during the 80s he had gone to President Reagan to ask for the U.S.'s support in helping to do something about the Dutch occupation regime in South Africa. I don't call them the South African government. They were never a South African government. They were a Dutch occupation regime, who are still there, by the way. And Desmond Tutu was asking Reagan, hey, you know dang well the U.S. is talking out of both sides of its neck, trying to talk about how the U.S. is so high-minded and so progressive and egalitarian, and you're supporting the apartheid regime there in South Africa. You got to knock it off. And when the meeting was over, one of Ronald Reagan's aides asked Ronald Reagan how the meeting went. Because you know how it went. The U.S. continued to support the Dutch occupation regime until the day it collapsed. But what was Reagan's response to Desmond Tutu's entreaties when he was asked about it? Hey, Ronald, how'd your meeting go? According to Sam Donaldson, Reagan said, Tutu? So-so. You saw what the hell kind of animalistic barbarity the Dutch occupation regime was carrying out in South Africa, which, by the way, they had the full backing of the U.S. government. The U.S. is giving them money, giving them weaponry, even giving them technology. Just to make sure that that apartheid regime didn't fall. You know, that old saying about that Dr. King said about injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. Well, the opposite is also true. Black empowerment anywhere is a threat to white supremacy everywhere. Anytime that a white supremacist regime can be overthrown by black power, that is an existential threat to white supremacy. That's the reason why they were so crazed about the Haitian Revolution. Thomas Jefferson was letting old Napoleon Bonaparte know, hey, you gotta hold the line in Haiti, because if it crumbles there, it's gonna start a domino effect. It's gonna go bad for everybody, so you better hold the line. But we could go on all night about Ronald Reagan's complete and thorough hypocrisy, his racist bile and all the rest of it. But this is old hat. The fact that all we're saying is white supremacy lies. That's not the reason why I brought this up. By the way, I saved this video clip months and months ago, long before Reagan's racist recording came to light. And the reason that I decided that I want to save this little video clip was because what Reagan was talking about got my attention, not his disappointment and little indignation at black people acting for themselves, but it was what Ronald Reagan said that the U.S.'s response ought to be because it didn't get its way in the U.N. He was talking about what should the U.S.'s, rather, let me rephrase that. He was talking about what white supremacy's response should be when it doesn't get its way in some sort of vote. If a vote is taken and white supremacy doesn't get its way, what should white supremacy's response be?
But I think there are other things we could do. I think that the United States, for example, I hinted at it a moment ago, I think the United States could participate in debate, in discussion, continue to support many of the agencies as we do that are doing good works, the kind of charitable agencies and educational functions and so forth, but just not participate in the voting. By not voting ourselves, thus remove ourselves from being bound by any votes. You see, one thing that needs reorganization is the fact that here are more than half of the nations in the United Nations today can carry a vote as a majority, and they represent less than 10% of the world's population.
Mm-hmm. You'd be for reorganizing that, for one thing.
And what did Reagan say that white power should do? Participate in debate and discussion. That was the first thing he said. We should continue to participate in debate and discussion. Oh, so what that means is just because you're not in the process doesn't mean you stop trying to influence that process. Doesn't mean that you stop trying to have influence in the debate and public discourse. Oh, the talk is going on. You're still there. You're still a part of it, but you're making it known. Long as this deliberative body, long as the voting powers that be refuse to do what I want, don't expect me to legitimize the system, but I'm still going to have a voice in it. You're still going to have to hear my mouth. I still expect to be able to influence and otherwise have some means of putting my own spin on the discourse going on around this or that issue. So that's the first thing. We ain't going to stop talking. We're going to be part of the debate. Two, He said to continue to support many of the agencies doing good work. Coming from Ronald Reagan, that's a joke. But he talked about educational initiatives. When he says educational initiatives, what he's talking about is propaganda. That's what he means. Teach these African nations to adopt and enact all kinds of policies that will be detrimental to them. Teach these people, educate them to trust their enemies. That's what he meant by education and such. And also when he says agencies doing good work, the charitable agencies, he's talking about what are basically CIA front groups. These aid organizations like USAID and others who claim to be relief organizations, they're nothing more than clumsy fronts for American intelligence operatives. A lot of these people going into these African countries claiming to be part of some aid mission, they are government operatives. They're saying, oh, we want to get everybody vaccinated. Yeah, and you don't know what the hell they're injecting you with now, do you? And saying, oh, we're here to feed people. Yeah, and at the same time, you're also making sure to tell them you don't need to have your own farms. White power is going to feed you. Well, they're going to feed you while they tell you sit on your hands and don't grow your own. These so-called relief organizations that Reagan's talking about, half the people who are in these things are nothing more than employees for the State Department or employees for the U.S. Army, or they happen to be snuck in there by certain politically connected U.S. corporations, all of them trying to figure out where the minerals are at, where's the gold deposits at, where the natural resources at. These are the people who tell these African nations that they had better promote abortion or whatever sexual lifestyle choice the U.S. tells you to. You better support this stuff and promote it in your own countries. And stop reclaiming the land for your people. Stop nationalizing the industries for your people's benefit. And you better stop pushing the white supremacists off the land that they stole from you and have been holding through brutality and corruption from you. That's what these relief organizations have. They got all sorts of people in there who show up and they make it very clear, you know, we got a little more heft than the rest of these worker bee relief employees over here. That's how they sneak their people in. These relief organizations that Reagan was talking about, these aid organizations, they'll often have bag men for the CIA as part of their group. That's how a lot of these CIA bag men get in. So these are not aid workers at all. These happen to be intruders for foreign governments, infiltrators, who are gathering information about these African countries, seeing if there's any dissident elements or otherwise disaffected traitors in the society who they can give some guns to, and these are going to be the rebels. Yeah, if your government refuses to play ball, then don't worry. While we were busy trying to bribe you and you didn't take the bait, we were also looking around to see if there was anybody who doesn't like you. And we're trying to encourage them and tell them that you're a bad guy and your government is bad. And we'll give them all the guns they need and why they'll be the new regime once they overthrow you. And you wonder how it is that these countries are dirt poor. They ain't got enough money for people to buy clothes, and yet people got AK-47s and rocket launchers and grenades. How the hell are they able to afford that in a country where the people don't even make $300 a year? Now, you know that comes from outside, and that's how these aid organizations work. Those crates that they have are not full of food. They're full of assault rifles and rocket launchers. That's what Reagan's talking about. We're going to continue to have these aid organizations, yeah, destabilizing governments who are sitting on resources that the U.S. covets. These aid workers show up and they try to sweet talk the locals into telling them any information that they can use against those countries. If you ever saw TV shows like Narcos talking about the drug war in Colombia, that's what was going on with that DEA agent. His wife was in Colombia claiming that she was a teacher, and maybe she was, but her husband wasn't no teacher. He was DEA. Except she didn't say anything about that. Yeah, you think that she... What's her husband? My husband's a consultant. Yeah, he's a consultant, all right. A consultant for the DEA. But that's what these guys do. That's what these aid organizations are. They're nothing more than front groups for intelligence operations against these African nations. The U.S. uses these so-called aid organizations as a means to sneak their spies into these African countries in order to scope them out. And that's what Reagan said we need to continue to do. White power needs to continue to go ahead and promote these aid organizations because Reagan understands what they really are and what they really do. You don't, but he does. So that's the thing. We don't stop trying to fight the war against white supremacy. We ain't sitting on our hands. We're not taking a coffee break. What we're doing is we're not encouraging black people to play along with the system that has never been in our interest. We are going to break the system to our will. But first, we got to be honest about the fact that this system, as it's currently constituted, isn't going to be working for us. We got to get serious about that and accept the reality. Reagan wasn't talking about white power sitting at home and sulking while the UN does what it wants. He's talking about rendering the UN irrelevant. That's why he specifically used the word reorganization. You saw how he stopped himself in mid-sentence just so he could throw that in there. He stopped himself. His train of thought derailed so he could get in the word reorganization. We're talking about a reorganization here. See, it's not about sitting in the corner and sulking. It's about collectively organizing your numbers in order to undermine a group who's working against your interests. But he made it clear when you don't vote, you're not bound by whatever decision the group you're abstaining from makes. If I am abstaining from voting in your group, then you're not going to hold me to any of your decisions. Those are your decisions, not mine. He's talking about weaponizing the voting process, weaponizing your ballot, not merely in how you use it, but also in how you don't use it. Because you see, Ronald Reagan, for all of his racism, he understands the purpose that voting serves in any setting or any society. And that's part of what I try to get you to understand. That's the reason why I keep hammering that point so much. Voting is about a hell of a lot more than just having your say in who's going to be sitting on this or that board, who's going to be sitting on this or that council, who's going to be sitting in this or that chief executive seat. The 1% are the smallest voting bloc in the country, but they win every election no matter who they voted for. Voting is a means of taking a poll, a nationwide, society-wide poll, to see how many people in the country are still going to go along with whatever the decision is. Because when you have people, voting engagement is at an all-time high, what that means is you can go ahead and put Barack Obama in the presidency and he'll let black people be shot in the streets. You ain't got to worry about a revolution because the people already said we will abide by whatever decision Barack Obama makes. That's what your vote is. Your vote is a vote of confidence in the system. It doesn't matter which side you vote for. The fact that you're participating means that you believe in this system because that's what a vote means. When you agree to be part of an electoral body, if you choose to be part of a constituency, what you're saying is, I will agree to and abide by whatever decision comes out of this process, even if it's a decision that says that I can be shot in the streets with absolutely no punishment for the killers. I will abide by that. That's what voting really means. Voting is you submitting to the system, and whatever comes out of the other end of that process, whatever policies that system chooses to enact, you're saying, I am giving a vote of confidence to it. But when you say, to hell with this, I'm abstaining from this, I object to the whole damn system, when you say, no more, I'm not going along with this anymore, what you are doing is you are giving a vote of no confidence. And when you decide that this or that group or this or that person or this or that organization is irrelevant, what you've done is you've also said that they're illegitimate. And haven't I always taught you that when you declare a person or a group or an organization or a particular idea to be illegitimate, you can do anything to that. You can disobey it. You can fight against it. You can destroy it. That's the power of saying, I'm not going along with this anymore. Because what it says to establish power is they got an organized group who are effectively working against the system now. They have withdrawn from it. That's what Japan did when the U.S. was cutting off their oil supplies in the League of Nations, the precursor to the U.N. When the League of Nations wasn't giving Japan what it wanted, Japan said, to hell with this. You know, we're not going to stop our aggression in China. China's got resources we wanted. The European did it all throughout the 18th, 19th centuries. Well, we're doing it in the 20th. And the Japanese left the League of Nations, which, by the way, was the death knell for the League of Nations. Japan, then as now, was an influential member of the international community. You couldn't have Japan say, we're not going to be part of this group anymore, and think that the group was going to have any influence in Asia. You got one of the most greatest powers in Asia saying, we ain't going along with it. That was the end of the League of Nations. You could write off any influence in Asia after that. That's what Reagan meant by, if the U.S. pulls out of the U.N., that'd be the end of the U.N. He understood exactly how that worked. And black people need to understand that even with 5% of the world population, the U.S. exercised disproportionate influence. We're a hell of a lot more than 5% of the population of the U.S. Time to throw our weight around. Stop it with trying to make everybody happy with you. They'll never be happy with you unless you are completely and thoroughly disempowered, which is only one step away from being dead, which is what the real goal is. A slow-moving genocide, but one that allows white power to be able to point at us and say, well, the black people went extinct in America, but you know, it was something that they were doing, or perhaps something they weren't doing, but you can't blame us. You cannot blame us. Why? The black people were voting all the time, and it's just those people that they kept choosing. Must have been all their fault. You see, white power understands that when you keep voting, you're saying, I believe in this system. That means you're not going to fight it. You're trying to change the system according to the system's own rules, according to the system's own rules and regulations. Because people who vote are not in revolt. The two cancel each other out. You're not, the people who believe in going to the ballot box and they're out there trying to get candidate so-and-so into office, these are not people who are going to be saying revolt, because if you're in revolt, what that means is you don't recognize the authority of the government. You're declaring the government illegitimate. The two cancel each other out. You can't be fighting for a candidate to get into office and at the same time saying that the government, its processes and its policies are completely illegitimate. You can't fight the system and build it at the same time. I'm trying to teach you to see the institutions of the society, and the elections are one of those institutions. See the institutions in this society the way that white supremacy does. Black people don't think like this because most of us are very short-sighted. Most of us don't know much, and the people who don't know much are usually the ones slamming their gums the most. And tragically, they're the ones who black people are most likely to follow. This is why we get the practice of elections and the practice of voting totally backwards. The ballot box is the last step in the voting process, but we treat it like it's the end-all and be-all. Let me tell you something. By the time you get to the ballot box, it's too damn late for you to have an effect on who gets elected or what policies they're going to put in place. By the time, the entire point of an election is to choose who gets what. But if by the time you get to the ballot box, if that's when you're making your choice, then you had no chance. The time for you to make your voice heard, the time for you to vote, is before election day, before the campaigns, before the primaries, hell, before the candidates even start stumping for support. The time for you to vote is when you're choosing who is even going to run. That's the time for you to vote. And that choice has to be completely and thoroughly yours. You got to stop playing the fool for this or that political party. Stop letting them dictate to you that you get to choose from white supremacist candidate A or white supremacist candidate B. That's no choice at all. But that is what Ronald Reagan and the U.S. thought that they had done to the Africans in 1971. They thought that they were dictating to the Africans what they were going to do as it pertained to the vote on whether or not the People's Republic of China was in or out. They thought, oh, well, we already got you guys to say that the People's Republic of China has no chance. Yeah, we're going to have Chiang Kai-shek and his little irrelevant minority being recognized because we're rendering the Chai Coms politically irrelevant. At least that's what they thought. But the Africans turned the tables on the bastards. and the Africans pursued their own interests, if nothing more than as an act of self-determination. Well, just as we get the voting process backwards, foundational blacks also get the concept of leveraging our vote backwards as well. When you abstain from voting, that isn't the end of the process. It's just the beginning. You don't sit at home on election day. You don't make yourself irrelevant. Hell, Reagan, as much of an irredeemable, satanic, evil bastard racist as he was, he understood how power actually works when it comes to voting. And that's part of the reason why he got what he wanted and we don't. The bad guys, if they are doing what power demands, if they're understanding how power actually works, as wretched as they are, they will still win every time. And even as virtuous as you may be, as moral as you may be, as ethical as you may be, if you are naive, if you are ignorant about the way that power actually works, then you will lose every single time. And eventually what you'll lose will not just be your power. You won't just lose your comfort. You just won't lose your peace of mind. You'll wind up losing your life and the lives of those dear to you. You continue to make your voice heard in whatever national discourse is going on. You continue to push your influence and to undermine those who work against your interest. You continue to expand your reach. But what you do is you stop playing the game of giving a vote of confidence to a system that ain't doing a damn thing for you. Do you get it now? That's the reason why abstaining from voting matters. That's the reason why. We don't stop talking, but we make it clear to everybody. Nah, we're not going to be re-engaging with this system until our agenda is on the ballot. That's the point that Reagan was getting across. Well, he was getting that across to white folks because they understood it. Black people are just now figuring this out. Abstaining from voting is a means to an end, not an end unto itself. Now, to some of you, that's probably worse than if I had told you, well, sitting at home on election day, that's all we're going to do. Because when I say that abstaining from voting is just the beginning, that means that there's a hell of a lot more work you're going to have to do, which means you're going to have to stop goofing off and you're going to have to put in some work to get your power. And to a lot of black folks, that's a turnoff. But you know what? For the black folks who don't believe in getting some sweat on your brow in order to get your power, this ain't for you. You need to leave Professor Truth alone because I got no patience for you. Voting is a business transaction. It's time for us to make it where the black vote has to be bought, and we are the ones who set the price. Ain't gonna be no haggling over this vote. The price that I put on the black vote, we don't get to haggle over that. It's non-negotiable. And no, I'm not going to be reducing it. The black vote is worth minimum $20 trillion, and that's just the down payment. Tangibles is a hell of a lot more than just our reparations, the lump sum for our reparations. Tangibles is what we would have to get under any circumstances, even if slavery had never happened. If you're a citizen of a country, the entire point of the nation is to take whatever the nation's resources are and make sure that the maximum number of people have access to them so that they have maximum ability to be able to improve their lives. That's what tangibles are. I need some real world resources so that I can make something of myself and my progeny so that we can have the best life possible. That's what tangibles are about. A nation is supposed to provide material resources to the citizens. The resources cannot and must not be the private preserve of only a few wealthy elites or a few well-connected, well-heeled plutocrats, and it cannot be just the sole preserve of those whose skin color is the right color. No, tangibles is a hell of a lot more than reparations. Reparations is just the beginning. And the price of our vote, we're the ones who set that. That value of the black vote isn't determined by other people. Damn sure not by the left hand or white hands of white supremacy. We're the ones who set that price. Now, convincing this country that we finally mean business, we got to accept the fact that this is going to take some time. We're not going to get this first try at bat. Why? Because we have spent, or rather misspent, the last 150 years being consistently inconsistent. Oh, sure, we've had a few moments where we threw our weight around for a hot minute and got tough with white supremacy, but only for a hot minute. We blew off some steam, and then we walk away without ever having taken our power. So white supremacy's looked at this. They've seen this for 150 years. Every time the Negroes get a head full of steam, don't worry, they're just having a temper tantrum. Wait them out. They'll go away. All you got to do is say no, and they'll realize, okay, they're just let them get it out of their system, and they'll be fine. That's what they think this is. They think that this is us getting it out of our system, but they've been listening to the talk coming from the new voices of black media. And they realize this storm is different. This is qualitatively different. We're in this for the long haul. This ain't a matter of blowing off some steam. They understand that. So what has happened is they've tried to see if they could hijack this movement. They've tried to see if they could send some of their hand-picked black bootlicks to Capitol Hill or put their hand-picked black bootlicks on the voting ballot. Let's go ahead and see if we can find some black puppets who will tell these Negroes, oh, you're getting what you want. No, what's happening is we're taking the hard line. We're demanding that they do what we say. What that means is when I tell you that they have to take the pledge, when we tell you that they got to be committed, what that means is they have to be our puppet. They have to repeat to us verbatim exactly what we say, exactly the way that we say it. They don't get to add to it or take away from it. We don't need them to say what they think we mean. They only need say exactly what we tell them to say. And we're not letting them get away with saying that, oh, well, you know, to me, reparations is, nobody asked what it is to you. Well, you know, what I think, well, I don't care what you think. Well, you know, like Bernie said, well, you know, if you ask me, nobody asked you, Bernie. And nobody asked Kamala either. And nobody asked Marianne Williamson. Nobody asked them what they think. They're being told what they're going to do. This is going to be a new thing for them. When they realize that we're serious about this and that they can't get us off our square and that they're not going to wait us out. White supremacy has always used those kind of tactics. Wait the Negroes out. Just tell them flat out no and wait them out. They'll give up. They'll go away. They'll understand that they never had a chance. Everyone tells us that we have no right to demand anything. When we demand what we're supposed to have, that's a handout. See, everyone else, when they get something, it's aid, or if you're a corporation, it's a subsidy, or it's always an investment. Okay, you gave a lot of money to group XYZ or to corporation XYZ or to interest XYZ. You didn't get a damn thing. You ain't got squat to show for it. But that doesn't matter. It was an investment. Yeah, an investment that doesn't produce anything. But for us, that's the best kind of investment possible. You get immediate dividends. As far as white power is concerned, nah, you guys just want something for nothing. No, something for nothing is what this country got and has gotten every day for 500 years off of our black backs. Freebies given to people who did nothing to earn it and don't even need it. But for the people who did earn it, the most deserving constituency of all, we're told that we want something for nothing. No, we're putting an end to the lies. So that's the reason why I decided that we needed to go ahead and focus on Ronald Reagan's little racism and what came out of it, because it was very interesting, not merely Reagan's bigotry, which is no surprise, that's not a newsflash, it deserves very little mention. What's interesting is Ronald Reagan, when he explained what ought to be done when your vote seems to not produce anything. What do you do in regards to a system that is not responsive to your desires for power? A system that is not responsive to your interest? A system that is hostile to your interest? What do you do? Well, the first step is you disengage.